You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. TheWordBros.com.
Welcome to the first Word Bros of the year. My name is Bob France. I write comics, and I am joined by my very handsome and well-bearded co-host, Kevin Cuff. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Bob. How are you this 2021 January evening?
What is it? We're recording this on the 5th. This will be out on the 9th, I think. I'm doing pretty good. So far, so good. Yes. So far, so good.
Good.
Today, we have
a... And to start the new year off right.
Yes,
we have to start the new year off right. We have. Go ahead.
No, you go.
I'm gonna let you go.
You're moving, baby.
No, I was gonna say we have a very, very fine, two very fine guests who are new to the Scout Comics family. We have Brian Hawkins and Patrick Foreman, who are the co-creators of Black Cotton.
I don't have to do anything. This is 2021, man.
I didn't know that you wanted me to. You know,
it's great. No, I don't do this. I don't care. You're.
Is it fun? You like laying back in the pocket? You like being Ed McMahon to my Johnny Carson? I like to be an Ed McMahon to your Johnny Carson. I feel like that's my better place in the world.
No, stop it. You're a charming boy.
I mean, being Ed McMahon means you bring people checks one day. That's where they like to see me.
You know what? If you're going to bring people checks, you can start with me, Daddy. Let's talk to Brian and Patrick. We'll learn all about their book, Black Cotton. Bros, we welcome Patrick Foreman and Brian Hawkins. They are the creators of Black Cotton, which is out this week, I guess, from Scout Comics. Is that correct?
Next month.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
February 10th
is the date on that thing. Okay. I thought it was out this month for some reason, because I guess everything from Scout seems like it's coming out tomorrow for some reason.
Yeah. It's a big day tomorrow.
It is. So February 10th, Black Cotton hits the stands. And gentlemen, how are you guys doing today?
I'm doing great.
Doing great. Outstanding. I appreciate you having us on, you know, Bob and Kevin.
Hey, no problem. Patrick, that felt very rehearsed and forced, so I just wanted to give that right back to you. That's right, Patrick. That's Patrick's voice that you heard. Now let's hear Brian's voice. Brian, say hello to the Word Bros audience.
Hey, Word Bros audience. What's up? Brian speaking.
Brian, I like how you waved at an audio podcast. That's
crazy. Yeah.
I'm waving, guys. I'm waving.
I can't see Brian, but he's happy to be here.
I'm very visual, and even when I'm not visual, I pretend to be.
That's awesome. The first thing I want to say, Brian, is I love your frames. As a glasses guy, I've always wanted to wear frames like that, but for some reason, I just can't pull it off. But you rock it well, my friend.
Well, I appreciate that, because and you know what the crazy thing is? I was actually checking out yours.
Warby Parker.
Nice. Yeah. Okay.
See, the trick with Warby Parker is they have glasses you can try on at home and then glasses that you can't try on at home. Look at the ones you can't try on at home. They have a lot of different varying styles, I've noticed. Because I would get try-at-home frames, and I would get the same five every time. And my wife was like, you know, you get the same five glasses every time, and you don't like any of them. I was like, all right, let me try something. So I tried something, and I landed with this, and I really like them. So Warby Parker is the spot.
All right. I will keep that in mind.
Especially with all the social distancing and stuff, you can't leave your house anyway, so you might as well just have glasses brought to you, you know?
Everything brought to you. That's the way to go.
Yes. Now let's speak about Black Cotton. Enough about spectacles and glassware and things of that nature. let's dig into this thing. Tell us, what is the high concept of Black Cotton?
Oh, go ahead, Brian. You know I love the way you do it.
Well, I appreciate that, brother. So you know, the log line is set in alternate reality where the social order of white and black is reversed, and hinges upon an elitist family rallying around their police officer son, who has tragically shot a minority white woman.
Okay. And so that's because that happens in the first issue, because Kevin and I read a preview of it, and like, because our question is like, where does it go from here? Because we have this, like, this high powered, like, super important billionaire family, and then like they have a son who's a police officer who shoots a white lady, and then like you're just kind of hinting along about, and I was just, as a reader, I was like, I need to know more. Where's the rest of this thing?
Right on.
So you asked some really good questions in this. Now, I don't know, man. Like, it's a very heavy book. Like, it's full of social commentary, which I think is kind of cool. It felt like a Twilight Zone episode, really.
Oh, ooh.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, yeah. It had that kind of vibe to it. Now, what were some of your influences kind of going into writing a work of like kind of social aware, like a social aware comic like this?
I think it goes back to a conversation that we were kind of having off scene, you know, before we actually hit the record button. But the core piece underneath Black Cotton is empathy. What we're trying to do is develop a safe space that individuals, our readers, the people who aren't even into comic books that get into comic books, will be able to actually walk in other people's shoes in a safe environment, and then have that dialogue between yourself, because the comic is going to it's going to automatically inspire you to ask yourself questions. And some of it you're going to relate to what you're going to see, and then some of it you're going to have those aha moments, like, oh, wow, I really, you know, didn't even think of it in that fashion. So our method behind it is simply that what we saw is, you see a lot of movies that their intent is to try to get individuals to feel for another race or another culture, or feel for the people in the being wrong in the movie. What we see is that it's hard for people to develop empathy if they can't actually see themselves in that position, or they're not depicted in that role. So by us flipping it, we made it where individuals actually, when they're reading, they're walking in other people's shoes, which makes it easier for you. It's almost unavoidable for you not to sort of develop some type of empathy as you go through our storyline, simply because it's almost like you're walking in the other person's shoes, and you know what they're thinking, you know what the other people are thinking and why they are thinking that. So it's really to develop empathy, and number two, create dialogue. Because what we want is people to gain more respect for each other, and also communicate with each other. And not to, you know, toot our horn either. It's a phenomenal story. It is really entertaining. Did it in a way where you are truly entertained.
Okay. I like that. Okay. So you guys cooked up the idea together, but Brian, you wrote the script, yes?
So we have a process. The backstory is that we have a mutual friend. Make a long story short, he and I talked together. He was like, I had this guy, he's a comic book collector, he's a good friend of mine, he's into comic books, and you two need to meet. And so one day we happened to meet up, and we're out eating, and he was like, I mean, Patrick was like, hey, I have this idea. And he was like, I'm thinking of, like, everything's reversed, like, everything's backwards, everything's flipped. Like, even the cotton is black. I said, whoa, whoa, that's it right here. Black Cotton, that's the title. Okay. And from that point on, you know, he began to elaborate on everything being reversed. And we just began to build the story from there, you know, and what vehicle to take that idea of reversal of roles in color, culture, and we spent like, we were eating, went to his house, and we just began to just talk everything out. And that was last January, January 2020. And so our process has been, we hop on Zoom calls like this, and or we're on the phone, and we wrote out the story together. Then we outline it together, and then I script it.
Okay. So basically, it's kind of like you both know where you're going. You just do the nuts and bolts work of it, Brian.
Right.
Okay. All right. And so, but you guys seem to have is this your first foray into comics, Patrick? Is this your first foray into like creating books?
It is. And what I would say, like I said in another interview we did, you know, I give much props to Brian, because I was truly a collector before I met him. It was a dream of mine. I've been collecting since 1993. Well, a little bit before then, probably about the late 80s, been collecting comic books. And, you know, it's been a dream of mine, and I had the concept, but never knew actually how to do anything. And from January, Brian has really taken me under his wing and taught me, you know, how to write scripts, how to, you know, formulate, and he didn't have to, you know, and I really, really, you know, tip my hat to Brian, because he's a phenomenal teacher. And now, you know, y'all won't see it, but me and Brian, y'all won't see it until later, I'll say that. But me and Brian, we've plotted out the next 5 years, and we've already...
Oh, my God!
Yeah. And we've already actually been writing spinoffs already. So he's already tasked me with another project. So we are killing it right now.
All right, awesome. Getting ahead of yourselves. I dig that. I like that.
My question, Patrick,
we ain't got enough time in quarantine, right?
It's true.
Motherfuckers ain't staying home, so you might as well just write comics.
Might as well be safe, write some comics.
Yeah, right.
So for the listeners out there, Patrick, what would you say the journey from collector to creator, like, what would you say that has been for you? Because Brian, this is not Brian's first rodeo, and we know that Brian's done a few comics. He's got a few under his belt. So as this being your first rodeo, what would you say that the journey was for you from to creator? Like, what would you say that, how would that journey have been? Like,
what I would say is this. I challenge, or I put out that more collectors should actually try it. Because it is a beautiful process. If you get with the right person, like I was fortunate enough to get with Brian, a right, you know, mentor who will actually, you know, give you that guideline, and you can take something from a blank sheet of paper and then see it, actually script it out, the synopsis, then you actually break it all down to page to page to page. And when I finished my first script, you should have saw how happy I was, you know? And then to get Brian to edit it and go through that whole process of editing it, and then the artist, oh man.
What was it like to get pages? This is my favorite part of comics, so I'm gonna ask you, what was your favorite, what was it like to get pages?
To get pages is
the art pages, a draft, right?
And then a couple of days later, you see the actual artwork. It is amazing and phenomenal. So it's something that now, you know, it is almost like a drug. You want to keep doing it.
It's like, and you know, much like a drug, it's really expensive to do. So that works too, you know?
Yeah.
It's awesome. Now
you want to keep writing. You're like, I need more artwork.
Now, Brian, how did your, I guess this is almost an obvious question, so I don't even feel like I should ask it, but I'm going to anyway. You were also an editor, yes?
Yes.
So how did your skills as an editor help with the first time comic book writer? Like, were you gentle with him with a lot of the mistakes? Were you kind and nurturing? Like, how did you go about doing this?
All right, so my side of the coin and how I viewed it, it really was a very smooth process, where like Patrick and I, we really do compliment each other, and in where he allowed me to I guess the best word is to guide the process. Mm-hmm. As we began, you know, he wanted to learn, and he wants, you know, and wanted to script. He wanted to, you know, be 100% involved and make sure that this is a, you know, a full-fledged partnership. So being a former teacher, having someone who wants to learn is key to that relationship. And for me, you know, I've learned to be patient. I respect the process of things. And so, you know, he and I were really just on a journey and in a process of creating this. And he listened, and I listened to him. And it was really, I mean, not to be cliche, but it really was kind of this best case scenario where I happened to know a little bit more on this level, in this avenue, and someone who wanted to know the things that I did know. And so I freely shared, and he freely experienced and learned, and here we are.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
That's cool. I dig that. So here's my obvious question, okay? Like, why is the cotton black? Obviously it's a metaphor, yes, I get that, but I mean, like, so you guys just wanted to flip the whole world on its head, right? Is there a reason, like, in the story wise why it's black, or is it just black because it's black? Like, it can't just be it's black because it's black. That would be silly. And
no, he's like, that would be ludicrous. Yeah.
No, and here's what I'll say. There's a reason why the cotton is black, but it's going to be unfolded later on in the story. Okay. And what you will see is that even down to their last name is Cotton.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're very rooted into their history. So the black cotton is actually very instrumental to their history. And that's why, you know, the black cotton, that's why the cotton is black. And there's a specific,
all right.
I'll say that.
Yeah, go ahead and share it.
Yeah, basically their wealth came from the technique of turning white cotton to black cotton.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, I get that. Okay, that's
okay. Cool. That makes sense now, having read the source material. So now I get it, because I don't want to give anything away, so I don't want to give any spoilers. But there's made reference to in the story. So like I was like, oh, well, like what does that even mean?
Kevin and I were talking about the book because we only read the single. And we were reading this and we just had so many questions. Was this something that you guys thought about just releasing as a trade? Because I felt like this is something I would want to read in a trade. Like, I want all the answers now. Like, why do I have to wait? Why? I don't want to wait. Brian, I don't want to wait. Patrick, give me my answers, man.
That's a great sign, because that means hopefully if everyone feels the way you do, they'll keep coming back each month. So that's excellent.
I think they will. The other obvious question I had, now the book is in black and white. Is the book, when you release it next month, is it going to be black and white? And that's obviously a metaphor choice for the story, I would assume.
Yes. We had, when we began to build the concept out, and we talked about characters, we talked about like how it would look, you know, black and white with gray tones was something we really focused on, because we wanted that that feel of a world that, you know, was not colored, because we're dealing with, and it says it in the log line, you know, the social order of white and black. So we're looking at the construct, not the specific race. And so to take the color away from it, like visually, was something we wanted to do, so that when you're reading it, you're looking at the characters, you're looking at the human condition, not just what's black, which is brown, and what is white, which is a really, 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 really light brown, because, you know, of our combined melanin, right? So that's where we wanted to go with it.
I like the black and white because, like I said earlier, it gave it like a Twilight Zone vibe to it. But as I'm going to play devil's advocate and I'm going to flip the coin on that.
I love hearing that.
But as a publisher, did you have a hard sell with the publisher? Because normally black and white books don't sell that well. So how was that pitch to Scout Comics about, hey, this is our artistic vision? Were they on board with that immediately or was it a hard sell?
It was immediate.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. There was never a question of if it was going to be in color or not. They got the concept. We had minor talks and like a few weeks later, they came back and it embraced us into the family. And we've been running ever since.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And that goes back to your earlier question of the trade paperback. Mm-hmm. Me and Brian, we tossed out every idea, to be honest, when we were at the beginning stages, because we were thinking of releasing it just ourselves. We were thinking about doing the trade paperback, you know, give all the answers up front. But then, you know, when Scout, you know, due to, you know, Brian and his extensive relationships that he's made over the years, you know, we were able to actually pitch to Scout and they just, you know, opened arms to us immediately. And after that, we were like, hey, we're going this issue by issue all the way.
Now, is there going to be any back matter in the issues about the world and the world building that you guys had to do to make this sort of sci-fi black and Twilight Zone black cotton world a reality? Is there any of that going to be in the back matter for the single issues or extra things that readers of the singles can expect that readers of the trade may not get? Like, are you going to give them any extra issues there, or are you going to put it, you will save it all for the trade? You go it all for the money, baby.
It's always about the money, right?
Yeah.
So I get the best way
to flipping it, right? That.
Huh?
I think we're going to flip that. We were talking about flipping it. We're actually, we were talking about giving people a little bit more in the trade paperback.
All right. I dig that.
That makes me happy as a trade waiter. So I'm going to tell you, you've just made my day, because now I don't have to go buy single issues just to read about the Twilight Zone world you created. I can wait for the trade paperback and I'm going to get it. I'll spend the extra money to get the back matter. I'm that guy who buys DVDs for the bonus selections, Blu-rays for the bonus stuff. That's me.
Oh man, that's cool to hear. Yeah, we, and the thing is that while this story, this arc, which, you know, will wrap up in six issues, you know, will have a resolution. Within that process, you know, there's subplots. And as the issues go on, you're going to learn more about the family. You're going to learn more about not just the Cottons, but the Nightingales, who is the family of the young lady that was shot. And you're going to begin to see the depth and the breadth of the actual Black Cotton world. That, you know, it's not just, you know, just honed in on this one family, but there's different families and pockets of people, neighborhoods, cities, states that all exist within this Black Cotton world. And there's history to like who the Cottons are and why they're the Cottons. And one of the great things that we'll also touch on in that back matter is like, you know, the fact that there's, in this reality, you know, there was no slavery. So it's not a point where everything's flipped to where white people were slaves, Black people like ruled them. It's a world where slavery did not exist, but still oppression does exist. So we're gonna be really delving into like, how did that happen? And you're gonna see and get some of that understanding throughout issues 1 through 6.
Now, a subject of this matter is bound to ruffle some feathers. Are you guys ready for the the controversy that may come along with this? Are you prepared for your Twitter timeline to be blown up by, you know, maybe thick-headed folks that don't really like your vision of this alternate reality?
Absolutely, absolutely. And we respect that. You know, that's the beauty about this medium. This medium is where you can put it out and understand that you're going to get positive feedback, negative feedback. You're going to get some neutral people, but it's okay. Somebody once said, you know, I don't care if it's good publicity or bad publicity, as long as they talking about it.
It's true.
And that's really what we want. Even with the negative, you're going to get 10 people who are going to respond in a different fashion. And as long as they're talking, then that means that growth is happening. And that's, you know, that's what we're seeing even in America right now. With everything that the president, you know, has put out there into the atmosphere, look at how many people are talking and actually growing. And hey, if people are talking, that's good. It's better than fighting.
Patrick, are you running for office or something? Like, what's going on here? Like, this talk of empathy and you know, getting the word out and stuff like that. Are you announcing some kind of senatorial campaign on the Word Bros podcast here? What's going on?
It's forming in 2024.
He's got the collared shirt on. There's a dog that just shows up, which is very political. Like, what's happening here? Like,
he just needs a baby to kiss. Who's got a baby?
Like a Patrick Forman 2022 button or something. Now, Patrick, you said you were a reader of comics. I got to ask you, because I'm sure we're all readers. Who's your favorite? Who's your favorite? Oh, that's all I'm going to say.
What were you collecting? Yeah, what were you collecting?
Who's your favorite? I don't even think what you're collecting is collecting, and favorite is completely different. Who's your favorite?
Wolverine and Sabretooth was always, you know, my favorite. I actually have, I have two of issue 166, which was the prequel to the Wolverine movie that came out, but it's only 25 in the world with Sabretooth remarked on the cover.
Wow, okay.
So it's signed and remarked with Sabretooth on the cover, and I have two of the 25.
That's pretty cool. So wow. you're a collector and a Wolverine dude. So the mid-90s, the early 90s, late 80s was your jam, because he was in every book.
Exactly.
wait, hot take. Are you on that Hickman X-Men or no? Are you with the new Hickman X-Men or no?
I'm not.
You're on one side of the fence or the other. So
I'm trying. I'm gonna give it, you know, it's fighting chance, but not yet.
It just hasn't,
you know, appealed to me yet.
All right, so Wolverine's your dude, okay? And like, you have this super valuable Wolverine comic. Now, you realize that you're probably going to have to sell that thing to continue to make comics, because
you're going to only have one remarked version by the time you're done, because comics is expensive.
Yes.
Lesson number one Brian didn't teach you in Karate Kid school. He had you paint the fence. He had you paint the fence. But he didn't tell you how much that was going to cost at the end.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry, Mr. Miyagi.
Every time I asked him, he was like, hey, just keep writing.
That's awesome. Wax on. Show me. Wax on.
That's wonderful. Now, Brian, you've got a bunch of other stuff out too, right? Like, this isn't like Black Cotton is your newest thing, but you have lots of other things as well, correct?
Yeah. Something like that. I am modest.
Brian is such a nice guy.
It's like, I guess, you know, what's
I try. I have a few things that's happening. This Devil's Dominion from Black Box was supposed to be out last week, but there was a delay in printer.
Okay.
So issue one is supposed to drop tomorrow.
Okay.
I'm doing some work with Black Box, and I just began to do some writing with Zenoscope.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool. Now, tell us about the book that's coming out. What's it called through Black Box?
It's called Devil's Dominion.
Okay.
It's about a young lady who sells her soul to the devil in order to escape a tragic event in her family life. And once she does that, she then reneges on her deal with the devil and uses her powers.
Don't forget, don't ever blink.
Yeah, that's cool. And then you're also doing something about that. Yeah, I want to hear something about that too.
Don't Ever Blink is a self-published title that I'm doing with co-creator artist Richard Kemp. And it's about a serial killer who sews the eyelids shut of his victims. Basically there's one survivor and she is trying to figure out why she was the sole survivor. And so as the story goes on, we discover who the killer is and we discover why she was spared.
Interesting. That sounds cool.
We're on our way into issue 3 of that on Kickstarter, like around February, March.
Okay, so you got all kinds of irons in the fire then, dude. And right. What's going on with Xenoscope? How'd you hook up with those dudes?
Oh, man. So Xenoscope is really cool. I feel like I've been chasing them for a while, actually. and they finally, it kind of just happened. I've stayed in contact with a few people there. I didn't bug them so much to where they didn't want to be around me, but I guess I bugged them enough to where hey. So we linked up and they asked me to pitch. They had a concept, but they asked me to pitch to this concept for one of their characters and their stories, and it went well.
That's awesome.
So my first story with them is a 72-page one shot. I can't really talk about the story itself.
No, you don't have. I understand how comics work. We've been doing this long enough that nobody can talk about anything. Like, we get it.
Can't talk about anything. So that went well.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So they invited me back to write another one. So it was cool.
There you go. That's now wonderful. Also, look at you, dude.
Also, aren't you one of the editors, the senior editors at Mad Cave Comics too?
I am one of the editors. Yes.
Look at this guy. He's Patrick. You wear all the hats.
You hooked up to a mighty good horse here, man. This dude knows everybody. Mad Cave's got some good stuff coming out, man. They got some heavy hitters over there, dude.
Mad Cave has been phenomenal. You know, they've been like family. You know, they when I was just. I was freelancing through Upwork, you know, I linked up with them and Mark and Chris Fernandez and all of them just, you know, they're phenomenal people. I've learned so much about the business being with them and them allowing me to work on a lot of their IPs. Just recently, a team I worked with, David and Shane and Luca, Nottingham was a book that I've been on with them as their editor for maybe 5 or 6 months for sure.
Okay.
If not more. That's finally beginning to come out. It'll be out in March. I think March, I don't want to say the wrong day, but I think it's March 4th, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, sometime in March. And just that team is so phenomenal. And just watching how they put that together and me being their editor and seeing that whole process, it's a humbling experience. And that's what I really have taken away from the Mad Cave experience, is just how collaboration works and how many hands are in the pot and how things come together and how everyone has each other's back. And that's been phenomenal to see, and it's been, quite the experience. And I try to live that way, but I also try to create that way as well.
That's awesome. Now, if any of our listeners out there need an editor, do you do work for hire stuff as well, or you got too much going on, you can't do stuff like that?
I try to, yes. Okay. Normally, if it's one or two things that need to be done, if someone needs some assistance with something, I always like to try. So
that's cool.
And I'm always open to it.
And where could we hit you up on social media for something like that?
Twitter, IG, so at Brian L. Hawkins. IG is Brian Hawkins Writes. I'm on Facebook, so you just have to look up Brian.
We all are. Facebook is like that ex girlfriend that just won't go away. Like you keep going back every now and then
because it's easier to share a post on Facebook than it is anywhere else.
Facebook is just one of those things, man. We made too much money on Kickstarter on Facebook that I'm not getting rid of it. Like I'm not.
You can't get rid of Facebook.
I want to, but I can't do it because we just made so much money on it for Kickstarter.
It works well for marketing, Kickstarter, and everything. I mean, there's so many groups on there, and it still is the place to like share your stuff out there. So,
So Patrick,
you get IG too.
That's true. They are kind of intertwined at this point, which is funny because people love Instagram, but like I hate Facebook. It's the same shit. Like it's just a different package. Now, Patrick, what are you doing with your first comics royalty check? What are you going to spend that on?
He's going to get the other 23 Wolverine books he doesn't get because he knows that he's going to have to like trade those to get artwork for comics.
I was just talking about, you know, me and Brian, we were talking about finishing up 2021. So that first check, I'm going to have to, you know, set it aside so that we can go and get 2022 done. All the projects we got, you know, for that.
Now you're talking like a real comic book guy. There you go.
There you go.
That's awesome.
Reinvested.
So you said you guys got 6 issues of Black Cotton that's coming out in February from Scout Comics. Are they finished already? Or are you working on them as they go? Because Scout is now on a bi-monthly thing. Is that correct?
They're doing that first. It's a 2-month gap, right, Patrick?
2-month gap.
Yeah, it's a 2-month gap, I thought. Okay.
So basically the first one come out in February, and then number 2 will come out in May. So February, March, April, and then boom, May. And then it's every month after that. So the series should finish up in September. And then what we're looking at, because it's an ongoing series, that's just the first arc.
Okay.
Then we're going to, you know, start the second arc, probably, you know, either January or February.
Okay.
Because we'll come out with the trade paperback. And then we're going to do a special one-shot for Christmas. So, you know, we'll keep people, you know, entertained and keep evolving the Black Cotton reality, the world. So that people actually, you know more about it, and then boom, hit them with the second arc.
There you go.
Nice.
I dig it, man. I like the forward thinking of it all.
I like the enthusiasm behind it. The idea to start conversations. I think that that's a thing that, like I was telling the guys earlier, that America needs. I think that this something America needs right now is to have these conversations. Especially due to the political climate we just came out of. These conversations are necessary for all of us to have, you know, empathy for each other.
I mean, I appreciate this conversation just for the sheer fact that, like, Kevin, you and I have been doing this, making comics for some time, and, like, sometimes we get sometimes we get grizzled and angry about the way things are going, but, like, to hear Patrick come on here, it's fucking sunny days and rainbows, you know? So that's nice awesome. kind of get that idea back, get that vibe back. So it's good that this is our first episode of 2021 to kind of reset, like, hey, man, like, this is wonderful. Like, making comics is a wonderful process, you know? And Patrick, you've just kind of put a hitching my Getty up, friend, and I really appreciate that, man.
Hey, we can collab and do something together sometime. That's something that me and Brian talk about. You know, we don't want to be isolated. We want to do stuff with, you know, if we evolve this, let's do, you know, let's cross lines and do stuff together. You know, this is what we love. So let's just do what we love together.
A huge Scout What If anthology where all characters cross over.
Oh my goodness.
Some of those would probably work better than others, you know what I mean? Like having Gut Ghost show up in Black Cut might be a bit odd, you know, but I guess, you know, that's sometimes two wrongs make a right, you know?
It might be dope. You never know.
So we've thought about it and my thing, it probably would have to happen in a what if timeline, you know, kind of pull that from Marvel a little bit and just do a what if timeline. And yeah, I mean, who knows, you know, Stabbity Bunny and Zion.
The funny part is, though, if we did a what if timeline for Black Cotton, what would that be? It would just be like now, like it would just be walking around like this is what it is. Like here we are, you know.
You're starting to break up. I'm sorry. I missed all of that.
I was saying if there was a what if for Black Cotton, what would that be? It would just be like life.
Now. Maybe now. Yeah. Like,
that would be interesting, right? Like, wait a second. This is reversed. We were slaves. What?
This is bullshit.
Oh, heck no, this not happening.
Let's go back the other way.
Oh, man.
We need a recount on this one. Recount.
Well, gentlemen, your book comes out February 12th. I guess it's not in previews anymore, but you can still go to your shop, try to pick that up. Go to scoutcomics.com. Maybe you can get some copies of it there as well when this thing comes out. I'm rooting for you, man. This is a cool book, and I think comics needs more things like this that can open a dialogue and kind of that makes people think. I mean, it's not a shark killing people for Satan, which is kind
but
of...
But that's cool.
It is, but that's the best. Cool. But that's the best part about the medium is that that these two books can exist at the same publisher, you know?
Like, yep.
Cool statement by Scout Comics. I did that, you know?
Mm-hmm. I agree 100%.
Well, mm-hmm. Brian and Patrick, thank you guys so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. If you guys want to share your social media again, Patrick, are you on Twitter or anything like that at all? Because you're going to need one because you're in comics now.
Welcome to the show.
I actually am. I'm on Twitter, Patrick D. Foreman. It's funny because Brian, I always say I'm going to let him go first because... But if you Google my name, Patrick Foreman, and put "he's able" behind it, I'll pop up. You'll see that I'm a award-winning gospel artist. I put a CD
award-winning.
Out and won an award from Independent Music Award for "He's Able." I also own a magazine, Returning Citizen Magazine. So when you Google, you'll see Returning Citizen Magazine, COO. That's me. I'm a retired Marine. So, I'm out there on all of them. I'm on LinkedIn.
I have so many more questions now.
Patrick's running for office in 2022 for sure.
Why didn't you tell us? No, first off, why didn't you tell us you were a Marine to begin? How long were you in the Marine Corps?
25 years.
Holy smoke. So you're like a lifer.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I retired in 2018.
I knew one dude, and he was a friend of mine's dad growing up, and he was a lifer in the Marines, and he was a different kind of cat. Like, it takes a different kind of cat to do 20 in the Marines. How did you do that? Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was something else, but I truly enjoyed what I did. I was a career planner, so I helped individuals plan their careers. I always tell people my job was to give the good news and the bad news. You know, I tell you, hey, you're staying in another 4 years, or hey, you got to go home. And here's, you know, I'm going to help you transition out. So it's a beautiful thing. I love it, which
that's
is
awesome.
Where I guess me and Brian and Black Cotton, that's where it all kind of unfolds from.
Look at him. He's already a pro. He's already got it. Look at that. He knew how to bring it back in.
Segue.
Did you see that? He segued it well.
So you were a Marine for 20 years. Okay. And now, and you're also like a gospel singer?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So I'm just having fun, to be honest. I'm just enjoying life. And, you know, Brian's helping me enjoy life even more, you know, so. 5 years from now, you know, we're going to have a comic book that we did together. It'll be Bob, Kevin, you know, Brian, and Pat.
That's awesome. Now, how did you get into gospel singing? Like, this is very interesting to me. And I know, like, how you're trying to, like, no, I don't want to talk about that. How did you get into gospel singing? This is amazing.
I've been singing all my life, to be honest. I actually sung for the... gospel choir on Quantico back in 1998 and 99, But I've been singing all my life. Every, you know, my parents sung, my aunts, singers were all in my family. And when I got to Virginia, I was just blessed to be around some phenomenal singers. So if you check out my I'm Calling On You is the name of it, the okay. name of the album, you will see that I have it's about 7 to 8 different individuals who are all stellar individuals. I mean, Richard Davis, just look up Richard Davis and you'll see all the people he's done work with. That's awesome. It's amazing. That's I was cool. just blessed. And yeah, so it's all cool.
That's
I'm just
really
having
interesting.
Fun.
That's really
Patrick's, cool. Patrick's now he's got the humble going on. Look
yes.
at this.
Because I know two, I can say I know 3 gospel singers. I know the Reverend Al Green.
Oh, right? What?
I don't know him, but I know his music. Like, I don't know him, okay. but I love him. I love Al Green. I'm just saying, I'm now familiar with 3 gospel singers, the Reverend Al Green, Kirk Franklin, and you. And this is wonderful. This is amazing.
Oh, man, that's so cool.
That's wonderful. Wow. That's
Al Green, Kirk Franklin, and Patrick Foreman.
I mean, that's really good company, right?
He put me in some great company.
Yeah. And like, a woman didn't have to throw hot grits on you to get to sing gospel music.
I know.
You just did it on your own. That's amazing.
That's so cold, too. You know, oh man, she really thought that out. That was premeditated.
Oh man,
I wasn't there, so I can't say. But I mean, it must have messed up Reverend Al Green's life real bad because he'd stopped. He's like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm done. I'm out. I'm singing gospel songs.
Yeah. Singing gospel from here on out. No he said, one throw hot grits on a gospel singer. I'm safe. God's gonna protect me from that.
No. All right, gentlemen, thank you guys so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. Patrick Foreman, Brian Hawkins, the creators of this fantastic new world, Black Cotton from Scout Comics, February 12th. Pick it up. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. For real. It was great.
Patrick Foreman, the creators of Black yes. Cotton. We talked for like an hour and a half after the interview. Patrick and I went to the same middle school, just at different times. He was a ninth grader. I was a seventh grader. Yeah, that's really weird.
It's amazing to see how small the world really is.
Yeah, that was really
And I think
weird.
That plays a lot into their comic book because it plays a lot into interpersonal relationships you don't know that you may have.
Yeah. It was very cool, man. Very cool.
And empathy with other people.
Very nice dudes. Very nice boys.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah.
We appreciate you showing up to Word Bros this week to listen to our in-depth conversation with Brian and Patrick. We'll be back next week with another conversation. Who are we having next week?
I don't know. You're just going, so I'm going to let you go. I don't know who we have next week. I'll figure it out, though.
We're going to figure it out. And you're going to come back and listen to the next show because it's going to be just as great as this one was. Thank you for listening to Word Bros.
Cutting a promo, Jack. Woo.
You're listening to the Word Bros podcast, thewordbros.com.